Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In the news this week, the Russia investigation moves into the White House.
President Trump's son-in-law and senior White House advisor, Jared Kushner, is under scrutiny in the FBI Russia investigation.
President Trump scolded NATO allies Thursday for not paying their fair share of defense spending.
If NATO countries made their full and complete contributions, then NATO would be even stronger than it is today, especially from the threat of terrorism.
And a bombing at an Ariana Grande concert in Manchester killed 22 and injured dozens of others. Shauna Hardy, who was at the concert with her daughter, described the scene.
The arena was full of children. Ariana Grande is a young person's sensation. There was an awful lot of children in that arena.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Karen Tumulty, Jeff Pegues, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online. Where do you think the Russia investigation is headed? What do you want to know about Jared Kushner's role? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Hey, Karen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jessica.
Also joining us from Washington is Jeff Pegues, justice and homeland security correspondent for CBS. He's the author of the recent book, Black and Blue, Inside the Divide Between the Police and Black America. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jessica.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Jessica, Karen, and Jeff.
So we're talking about the Russia investigation and the president abroad. And I want to start with the big story now, Jared Kushner, a focus of the Russia investigation. According to The Washington Post, the investigators are looking into Kushner's meetings with Russia and possible financial crimes. Jeff, help us understand, what does that mean when they call him a focus?
Well, we have not reported that he is a focus. There are other outlets that have called him that. We are simply saying that Kushner is under scrutiny. And what that means is that FBI agents are looking at some of these contacts that he had with Sergei Kislyak. That is a name that a lot of Americans have now become familiar with. He is the Russian ambassador. And Kushner met with him in December, and then at Kislyak's urging met with Sergei Gorkov, who was the head of a Russian-owned bank. It's called VEB Bank. And Gorkov is someone who was trained by Russia's Federal Security Service, or FSB. And so if you have, which is what we reported, the FBI scrutinizing his contacts, that just means that they are looking into some of his activities. Keep in mind, Kushner was someone pivotal to the campaign, a big part of the transition. And so he was connected to a lot of activity around some of the figures that have now emerged in this investigation as people who are under scrutiny. You have Paul Manafort, you have Michael Flynn, you have Carter Page. For them to look at him, it just means that they are looking at some of these contacts. Does not mean that there is any indication at this point of wrongdoing or something improper.
Karen, Jared Kushner is a central figure in the White House. How are they reacting to this news?
They pretty much aren't.
of course.
They have continued to insist that leaks are a bad thing, that the president continues to insist that the whole scandal over Russia is just ginned up by the Democrats as an excuse for Hillary Clinton losing. But this is getting closer and closer, and this is no longer a question of you know, potentially rogue campaign aides when Jared Kushner's actions are being looked at.
Former director of the CIA, John Brennan, testified before the House Intelligence Committee Tuesday. He said it's clear that Russia did interfere in our election process.
It should be clear to everyone that Russia brazenly interfered in our 2016 presidential election process, and that they undertook these activities despite our strong protests and explicit warning that they not do so.
Jeff, in testifying, he also said that individuals who go along a treasonous path often do not realize they're along that path until it's too late. Those are pretty chilling words from a former CIA director. And now we understand that former NSC director Michael Flynn, who was another focus of the investigation, is in danger of facing contempt charges from Congress. What's going on with Michael Flynn?
Well, he is someone that obviously we've reported quite a bit about the fact that he is for some time now been under FBI scrutiny. And his attorney came out and said this week that that his client intends on pleading the fifth. As you know, there are separate investigations. There is the FBI investigation, but there are also these congressional investigations. And because of what Flynn's attorney called a public frenzy around this case, they felt that the right course of action for them was to plead the fifth out of concerns that he could be prosecuted based on what he would tell the Senate panel that is investigating these Russian interference, as well as whether there was collusion involving members of the Trump campaign. So Flynn still remains a major figure in this Russia investigation. His name continues to pop up when I talk to law enforcement and intelligence sources. And so I think that was the big news of the week in connection with this Russia investigation, that he was not going to talk willingly with this congressional panel.
Interesting. So that was your big news. I also thought it was interesting that the FBI has decided to withhold all those notes we heard that former FBI Director James Comey had written. They're not turning them over to the House Oversight Committee, and now they've issued a new June 8th deadline. Jeff, give us a little sense what that's about.
Well, that's you have, as I mentioned, you have these other investigations underway. Now you have a special counsel, Robert Mueller, who is taking over as well. And so part of the delicate dance here is making sure that the congressional investigations don't overlap or impede the FBI investigation. And so you have these demands from members of Congress on some of these major figures connected to this investigation. But what is happening now and what we're seeing is that, in a way, there's a turf battle over what will be appropriate to introduce in this public testimony and what will not be appropriate. So this is a really delicate dance, not only for investigators, but also for the leaders of these House and Senate panels as they move forward with this investigation. And there has been a flurry of activity this week, but you know, people have to keep in mind that this is really early on in this counterintelligence investigation. It will continue for quite some time.
Jeff, to your point about overlapping jurisdictions and turf battles, here's North Carolina Republican Senator Richard Burr, head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who said on Tuesday the committee would issue two new subpoenas to get Michael Flynn to turn over documents about his contacts with Russian officials.
If, in fact, there's not a response, we'll seek additional counsel advice on how to proceed forward. At the end of that option is a contempt charge, and I've said that everything is on the table.
Jack, subpoenas flying, contempt charges mentioned. This is a hot mess and not the way a new White House would want to start their administration.
Not at all. And to go back to the Kushner matter, look at the pattern here. His meetings, Jeff mentioned, with the Russian ambassador and the Russian banker came, I believe, in December after the election, and they could have been perfectly innocent. If so, why didn't Mr. Kushner put that down, admit that on the relevant forms? Apparently, he didn't. He didn't. He said, "Oh, I forgot to put it in there." Jeff Sessions similarly had a failure of memory about meeting the Russian ambassador. Mr. Flynn lied about his contacts. "I didn't meet the Russian ambassador," until it was exposed. Again and again, the pattern. people saying one thing and then the facts coming out and they're saying, oh, gee, I forgot about that. If it were innocent, why all this acrobatics to disguise it? It beguiles belief.
Karen, you said that the White House is saying mostly nothing and maintaining the problem is the leaks, but there are Republicans around town who must be getting a little nervous now.
Certainly. And I think that Republicans are also beginning to be eager to see Congress conduct both an aggressive and a credible investigation of all of this, because that is likely to be their very best protection as they head into the midterm elections. Last week, when Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein met with members of the House, this was in fact an issue that they pressed him on. They said, you understand, don't you, that Congress has a role here too. And Congress's role goes well beyond it goes way far beyond whether there was a crime committed. Congress needs to be aggressive in looking at why it happened and what can be done to prevent things from happening in the future. Because this situation with Russia is not just happening in U.S. elections. This seems to be an effort on their part that's happening in a lot of countries. So it's really hard to say this was just all about sore feelings as a result of Hillary Clinton losing.
You make the important point that they have an oversight function and it's part of governance that they get to the bottom of this, they being Congress. But there's also the politics of it. And we are looking ahead to an election year, a midterm election. It can't be good for Republicans to be running these investigations as they're headed up to that. They must not be excited about this.
Well, it's certainly not, something that they are enthused about. It's also something when you see these kinds of deep ethical thickets, it's more often something you see in the second term of a White House.
Right.
The fact that this is how the Trump administration has gotten out of the gate is even more concerning.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook, and you're listening to the sounds of music from Saudi Arabia at the start of the president's foreign trip earlier this week. We'll be talking about that this hour, along with the top stories, the Manchester attack and the Montana special election. You can join our conversation. What are your fears after the Manchester attack? Has President Trump been sending the right message to our foreign partners while abroad? My guests today are Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, Jeff Pegues, justice and homeland security correspondent for CBS News, and On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Karen, let's talk about the president's trip abroad, and I want to start with what went well.
It's like it's been two trips abroad. He got a very friendly reception in the Middle East, and most notably in Saudi Arabia. And he has taken a completely different, more aggressive posture in Europe, specifically upbraiding NATO, other NATO members. And so, it has really struck me almost as two different foreign trips in one.
President Trump, in his address to Arab leaders in Riyadh when he landed Sunday, he said shortly after he landed, President Trump said Middle East leaders need to take the lead in driving terrorism and extremism out of their nations.
A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth.
So, Karen, at the beginning, he delivered a pretty clear message that was focused largely on terrorism. He did get some heat for not bringing up Saudi Arabia's human rights abuses and for encouraging them to for selling more than $100 billion of arms to them and encouraging investment in the U.S. Those are the kinds of things that prior presidents might have taken a lot of heat for doing, and he did not.
Exactly. Not only did he not bring up human rights, he said very specifically, we are not here to lecture you on how you live your lives. So he was sending a very clear signal that this administration is going to back away from those kinds of issues. He also came out of that meeting with a lot of confidence. He said that Saudi Arabia will begin to work in partnership with the United States in you know, dealing with terrorist forces. That remains to be seen.
Then moving ahead, he also shifted gears when he visited Europe ahead of a NATO meeting on Thursday. The president scolded NATO member countries for not meeting their financial commitments to the alliance.
NATO members must finally contribute their fair share and meet their financial obligations. But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they are supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers of the United States.
So, Jeff, Karen mentioned the first part of the trip was a very smooth part. And then when he headed over to Europe, things got a little rockier because what he's doing in Europe is he's failed to renew the U.S.'s commitment to NATO's principle of mutual defense. It's sort of the foundation of our alliance, that if you attack one member, you attack us all. What kind of impact does that have on our mutual security?
Well, it reinforces what a lot of our NATO allies believe, and that is that the president is not as committed to the principles that most U.S. presidents going back decades have been committed to in terms of NATO. And so, yeah, that was the bumpy part of this trip, was this meeting with NATO members and the photo opportunities and the shoving the leader of Montenegro out of the way. It was a little bit of a bumpy ride. But I've spoken with White House officials who feel like it's been a good opportunity for President Trump to show a different side of him to the rest of the world. So they've been encouraged by what they've seen, even with the images that I described there with the president and the photo op pushing the leader of Montenegro out of the way. They see this as a success. However, if you just look at what came out of the meeting with the NATO members and this bit of reinforcing what President Trump views as the deficiencies of this alliance, there are a lot of people who were not pleased with how that all unfolded and how it made America look in terms of in the eyes of our NATO allies.
On the phone lines, Andy is calling in from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Andy. What's on your mind?
Hi, Jessica. I just wanted to call and say that I thought the president's trip was a success. I really appreciated his stand with NATO as far as they need to get on board and start paying their way and to protect their own nations. And I just saw the success. I think he's a great president. And I appreciate you letting me talk to you.
Thanks for the call, Andy. Jane is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Jane. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. My comment is that I'd like to see President Trump pay his fair share of taxes before he lectures NATO.
Okay, Jane. Thanks for the call. Jack, what's your take on the president's trip abroad? How do you think he did?
Well, you really have to define the presidency down when you're talking about the president, President Trump, abroad. People put it, expectations were lowered. And against those expectations, I suppose he did pretty well. I was struck by his referring both in Saudi Arabia and in Belgium to ISIS members as, quote, losers. Well, you know, that's the same word he uses for Rosie O'Donnell. The pathetic paucity of his moral vocabulary continues to astound. And, you know, as to the meeting with the NATO people, a headline in Foreign Policy, I think, says it all. Trump hands Putin a win at first NATO meeting by not speaking up for Article 5, as you mentioned, the one for all for one linchpin of the alliance. Now, and I also heard some sound this morning from I think it was one of the White House advisors saying, "Well, we're looking at sanctions. We're not." They're talking about sanctions over Ukraine. One wonders: is the big question about Trump has always been: does Russia have anything over him? Well, hands Putin a win at first NATO meeting. You could see that as part of a quid pro quo. And if they go along with the weakening sanctions, that would be another. I'm not saying it is, but there's the fact. We have had a president for the first time since Harry Truman not publicly reaffirm his commitment to Article 5.
There is so much we could continue talking about on the president's trip, but there's other news we should get to, including this week, the president's travel ban. An appeals court struck down the administration's travel ban, which prohibited people from six Muslim-majority nations entering the U.S. The ruling said the ban is, quote, steeped in animus. Jeff, it's another big blow for the president's policy. What are we hearing from the Justice Department on this?
Well, that they will continue to pursue this. This is an executive order that just can't get out of the courts. And we have, as you noted, Jessica, another decision here that goes against the Trump administration. And the tone of the ruling from the majority judge, as you noted, it was pretty harsh, saying that this executive order drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination. So this is a recurring problem for this administration, trying to get this particular executive order out of the courts. It could end up in the Supreme Court. We're watching to see where this goes. But the Justice Department is committed to pushing it forward and making sure that it somehow becomes law.
Karen, it's not just the travel ban that's getting stymied. On almost every front, the president is having a challenge getting his policies and agenda over the finish line. Are they feeling frustrated?
Very much so. And we saw this in the kind of pageantry they tried to gin up around the first 100 days. And I think the basic problem here is that the president was elected with less than a majority of the popular vote, and he has not done a lot since his election to do much more than stoke up his own base. And that may be a formula for getting reelected, but it is very difficult to achieve, important steps on policy without reaching out at least to the middle on issues.
So where do they go from here? He comes back from the foreign trip. And what is the issue they're going to push forward?
There are so many that are hanging in the air right now. I think something interesting to watch will be as members of Congress go home for the Memorial Day recess, how is health care being perceived and received out in the country, the Republican efforts? Because Mitch McConnell already made some comments this week that suggested at least some skepticism about his own ability to get to the 51 votes they're going to need. And if senators in particular are getting a lot of blowback in their states, they may come back looking at this issue entirely differently.
We're going to get to a larger discussion about healthcare and the new numbers from the CBO. I want to turn for a moment now to the tragedy earlier this week in Manchester, England, when a suicide bomber attacked an Ariana Grande concert there on Monday. 22 died. There were multiple arrests. ISIS has claimed credit. And now there are all these leaks about the investigation, and the Brits are not happy. Outside Downing Street on Tuesday, British Prime Minister Theresa May condemned the sickening cowardice of the attacker.
It is now beyond doubt that the people of Manchester and of this country have fallen victim to a callous terrorist attack, an attack that targeted some of the youngest people in our society with cold calculation.
Jeff, after that, there were a number of, as I mentioned, intelligence leaks. The Brits think that they've come from the U.S. Right now, our Secretary of State is in London, and he's held a press briefing, and he publicly said, "The president and I regret the intelligence leaks, but our relationship remains strong." What is going on with our intelligence sharing with Britain?
Well, there are problems in the relationship right now, and typically you don't see this play out publicly between Britain and the U.S. They have historically worked incredibly well in terms of intelligence and law enforcement and trying to prevent terrorist attacks. But this week, because of some of these leaks, that relationship has shown a rift. No one really expects that this is a rift that will continue because both sides rely on each other so consistently. But it's obviously a problem, especially as the British law enforcement agencies try to dig into whether this attacker had someone working with him, whether there was a network behind him. And so leaks jeopardize the investigation and jeopardize the search for clues, which is why this has become such a big issue. But again, no one really expects that this rift will last for very long.
Karen,
I think it's also worth noting that there's difference between the two countries in how leaks are treated. Britain has an Official Secrets Act where the government can put a ban in advance on publication of government secrets. We don't have this in this country. And Donald Trump is not the first president to be frustrated by leaks. The Obama administration had an unprecedented string of prosecutions for them.
And now the DOJ has announced they're going to be investigating some of these leaks. Quickly, if you could, Karen, do you think are reporters concerned that'll be used to silence them and their sources?
I think, and again, going back to the Obama administration experience, they also tried to come after reporters and their sources.
And they did.
Yes. Yeah, they did. Right. And I think reporters do have reason to be concerned.
In the last few minutes before we go to break, there was some big news overnight. A Republican candidate for the House in Montana won his seat after allegedly slugging a reporter the day before. I want to listen for a moment to that interaction. Greg Gianforte, the Republican candidate in Montana's special election, is accused of body slamming Guardian reporter Ben Jacobs after Jacobs asked the candidate to respond to the CBO score on health care. The incident prompted a police investigation. And again, the candidate was charged with assault. Here's the incident.
And we'll talk to you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have the act.
Speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
Sick and tired of you guys. The last Jesus time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here.
Jesus.
Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Karen, he has since apologized and then won an election. Does he now become a problem for the GOP?
The question is whether anything like this continues to happen. And it's not just with him. I mean, this is the third incident in just about a month where we have seen reporters manhandled. In West Virginia, a reporter was arrested because he was asking questions of the Health and Human Services Secretary. And you saw a reporter asking questions at the Federal Communications Commission shoved. So the issue here, I think, is that there's been this kind of unleashing of animus against the press. And when you have a president of the United States who stands up at rallies and says things like he wishes he could punch a protester, it does seem, I think, to sort of give permission to things like this.
Jack, if you could, in the last minute before break, do reporters need to start going out there in body armor?
Well, if they're going to ask tough questions about healthcare, who knew that a CBO score of all recondite matters could provoke such a response? But I think Karen is exactly right. It's the unprecedented language of abuse that Mr. Trump has unleashed on the press. That's part of the ideology of this incident and subsequent. And I'm afraid a predictor of subsequent incidents. I mean, the right wing runs against the press. Now they're taking it the next step. The press is the enemy. Therefore, there's no penalty for beating up on a reporter. Boy.
Who would have thought that's a danger job that needs security pay? Coming up, massive cuts in the Trump budget proposal and the damning CBO score on the GOP healthcare bill. I'm Jessica Yellen in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jessica Yellen, in for Tom Ashbrook. In other news this week, Late Night's Conan O'Brien riffed on a video that went viral. It was Melania Trump pushing away the president's hand as they landed in Tel Aviv.
There's another viral video of Melania Trump again rejecting President Trump's attempt to hold her hand.
Yep.
Now even Israelis and Palestinians are saying, geez, work it out, you two.
After 146 years, the Ringling Brothers Circus took its final bow in Long Island Sunday. Circus fan Melissa Vornman.
I've been going to the circus since the 1970s when I went my first time with my dad at Madison Square Garden. It's been a part of my life, and I couldn't miss the last show.
Roger Moore, who had the longest run as secret agent James Bond, died Tuesday at 89. Here he is in Live and Let Die.
My name's Bond. James Bond.
I know who you are, what you are, and why you have come.
You can join the conversation. What do you make of the president's proposed budget? Are you worried about spending cuts? Happy about funding for the wall? My guests today are Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, Jeff Begays, justice and homeland security correspondent for CBS News, and On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. We're going to start just with a mention of a story I think we can't go without acknowledging. It is graduation season, and there's word that a young Army lieutenant named Richard Collins was about to graduate college in Maryland. He was a student at Bowie State University, and he was killed in what police are calling a totally unprovoked attack while waiting for a bus at the University of Maryland. He was black. The assailant was white. Police have now launched a hate crime investigation. It's just a terrible story we wanted to acknowledge, and we send our thoughts to Richard Collins' family. Also this week, the Trump administration in national news has released its new budget. There are dramatic cuts to social programs from Medicaid to food stamps, elder care, cancer research, even security at Amtrak and transportation hubs. Karen, the big question, will this ever make it through Congress?
That is again, the tension that we have had in this country. And I don't know how you would predict this at this point. Often these things are driven by outside events.
So do you have a sense if it'll be reformed? I mean, my guess is a lot of this will be changed. It's sort of a wish list. And Congress will take on board some of these measures. Can we discuss some of the things that got new funding? The wall and funding for the military, are those likely to be popular in this Congress?
I think that the wall is probably a non-starter, and funding for the military is likely to be much more popular.
So how does that work? If they actually never fund the wall, the president is – he won't take that sitting down. Do you think he's going to try to find another way to fund it through allocations?
Well, certainly the president does have some powers to redirect funding, but they're pretty limited. And it's interesting because, for instance, there are almost no border state Republicans who support this. And you go down into these districts and you find out that even, again, people who voted for Donald Trump do not think this wall is either a good or an effective measure.
Jeff, one of the measures calls for cutting security spending at Amtrak. Now, how does that help Homeland Security?
Well, it doesn't, especially in this environment that we're in now. We have John Kelly, the Secretary of Homeland Security, testifying on Capitol Hill about the threat that the country faces from terrorism. And so when you have those types of cuts, there are people who will see that and get a mixed signal. If you will, from the administration. And so there's some issues with this budget that I think some people in law enforcement might have, especially the reduction in funds for the Viper units that are often. Well, these are the Hercules units, the teams of heavily armed first responders that can jump into action if there is any type of incident. And so there is this discussion about cutting the number of Viper units available. And so anyone who is in law enforcement who is intent on protecting the nation from these types of threats will look at that and get a mixed signal, if you will, from the administration in terms of what their priorities are.
Joe is on the lines calling from London, Ontario. Hi, Joe. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. My comment was that I'm from Canada, and I think the States is a great country. Always has been. But when your president starts coming out spending huge amounts of money, the budget that they increase for the defense, which defense, you're not going to have a war, number one, but they spent way more on that, but they take away from who? From the people that need it, from Medicaid, from seniors, subsidies for seniors living, from education programs. Like, how is that helping your people?
Joe, thank you for the call. Karen, there are a lot of cuts to social programs that could actually impact Trump voters. This is likely to have political consequences down the line if enacted.
And Democrats are certainly going to keep reminding people of this. And beyond that, they're going to set it in the context of tax cuts, which the Republicans are also looking to do, and tax cuts specifically that heavily benefit the wealthy.
It also assumes a 3% growth rate. So on Wednesday, during a House Budget Committee hearing, Republican Representative Mark Sanford of South Carolina actually criticized the president's budget, and he said it's built on flawed math. He focused on the fact that the budget does assume this 3% growth rate, and the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates that our growth going forward will be just 1.9%.
I think it is just disastrously consequential to build a budget on 3% budget. The Bible says you can't build a house on a sandy foundation. What it does is it perpetuates a myth that we can go out there and balance the budget without touching entitlements. It's not only a myth, it's frankly a lie.
Randy is calling in from Statesboro, Georgia. Hi, Randy. What's your comment?
Hi, Jessica. Two things. I think we need to start cutting the budget. We need to spend more money on military. And if we don't, I'm afraid we're going to go through a socialist and into a communist situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, in the effort to avoid that scare future, the president has also proposed reforming making extreme cuts to the budget and also now reforming health care. This week, the Congressional Budget Office came out with a score of the GOP's health care bill, and it was not good for the Republicans. It says 23 million people will lose their insurance by 2026. And yesterday, in his weekly address, House Speaker Paul Ryan responded to criticism about the CBO score, saying that it's going to be better than expected.
I think what members are frustrated with is what's behind the CBO analysis about who gets insured and who doesn't get insured. If you leave it up to a person's choice, then they'll make a choice. If the government's going to stop forcing people to buy something that they don't want to buy, then they won't buy it.
Then on Wednesday, after the release of the score, the Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer railed against that same health care reform bill.
Trump care would be a cancer on the American health care system, causing costs to skyrocket, making coverage unaffordable for those with pre-existing conditions and many seniors, and kicking millions off their health insurance. Unless you're a healthy millionaire, Trump care is a nightmare.
Karen, it sure seems the Democrats have the political advantage on this issue, but Republicans have committed to reforming health care. So what happens to the bill now?
I think it is very much up in the air what happens to the bill now. That what we do know is if the Senate manages to pull together its own version of the health care bill, and that is a big if, it will be significantly more moderate than the House version. And so then beyond that, you have the question of whether the two can reconcile their approaches. That this is, you know, it was a very easy campaign promise to make for Republicans. It was very, very easy for the House to vote to repeal Obamacare dozens and dozens and dozens of times when there was no chance of it actually happening. But they are discovering that actually legislating this stuff, as Donald Trump noted, turns out to be very, very complicated.
Healthcare is hard. Jack, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, it's part of a pattern, and the Financial Times, which is not a Bolshevik publication, put it this way. It's a blueprint, speaking both of the budget and the health care proposal, a blueprint for epic betrayal, betrayal of the people who voted for Mr. Trump. You know, take one data point out of this sea of distressing news. A 64-year-old now under Obamacare making $26,000 a year pays $1,700 in premiums. Under this bill, that person would pay anywhere between $13,000 and $16,000, an 850% increase. Who are those people? Well, a lot of them are people who, in rural America, who voted for Mr. Trump. He cuts Medicaid by $600 on top of the $800 billion cut by the House. Well, who does that hurt? 29% of the population of West Virginia is on Medicaid, a state that went for Trump by 40 points. Meanwhile, on the other side, according to Bernie Sanders, this eliminating the estate tax, which is part of the whole Trump program, would save the Walton family alone, the heirs of Walmart, $53 billion. Goodbye, oligarchy. Hello, plutocracy.
Karen, if you look at the picture in Congress, it does seem that a bill that could get through the Senate, a health care bill that could get through the Senate, cannot get through the House, and vice versa. In fact, the House is re-looking at the bill that they already passed. This isn't only on health care. It also is true on tax reform to some extent. Is the Republican Party deeply divided to such an extent that they might be in their own legislative gridlock going forward?
Well, this has been the case even before President Trump was elected. But their problem here is that they are going to have to decide whether they are in more danger by breaking these commitments that they have made to their own base to do these things, or whether they are in more danger by being forced to compromise and water this down into something that can get passed. And I think until we see the dynamics getting a little bit closer to these midterms, I think we're not going to know what the choice for them looks like.
Think about Donald Trump coming back from this trip now, headed home not yet, but shortly. What will be a lasting impact of the trip? I mean, we all obsess over these details every day, but is there something that is going to have repercussions going forward? Karen.
Well, I think that, they're going to come back and be most heartened by the reception that he got in the Middle East. And I think just the sheer image of Donald Trump on the world stage standing among these leaders is going to be the one that lasts. I mean, there's some pretty weird images in here, too, such as the touching the orb and the sword dance and all of that stuff.
That was amazing. That orb was amazing.
But I do think the larger picture is, you know, Donald Trump is now leading the world's greatest superpower, and the rest of the world is having to deal with it.
I'm going to turn at the end of the hour to a bit of a head-scratcher story, and one that I know, Jack, is close to on your mind these days. In 2016, Seth Rich, who is a DNC staffer, was murdered in Washington, D.C. Now, that murder remains unsolved. Earlier this month, Fox News published a story based on a groundless conspiracy theory that said this kid, Rich, leaked tens of thousands of emails from the DNC to WikiLeaks and that his murder was tied somehow to that action. Now, Fox has retracted the story, but host Sean Hannity, who pushed the theory on his show, says he's retracting nothing. In fact, after a public outcry, Hannity said the following on his show Tuesday.
When I saw the video of the parents online saying they want answers, and I know the brother Aaron started a GoFundMe page, it truly pained me. However, out of respect for the family's wishes for now, I am not discussing this matter at this time. Now, let me explain this. There are so many issues here, not the least of which is the Democratic push of their Russia narrative, collusion, Trump, Russia narrative, Trump, Russia narrative.
Jack, what's your take on this story?
Well, it exemplifies the grip of conspiracy theories on the conservative mind, something written about very eloquently in the Post this morning by Michael Gerson. He says the future of conservatism may depend on its capacity for revulsion against these lies. And there's Fox News again. You know, according to PolitiFact, between 60 and 70% of the statements made by people on that network are false or mostly false. That means something very serious about this Russia investigation. It has to be as clear as truth can be. If anything is found, either obstruction of justice or connection with Russia, that has to be very, very clear so that Trump voters out there will understand that something really bad happened and there isn't some liberal conspiracy theory behind it. I'm just afraid that we're going to hear more of this from these liars, these propagandists, and that more and more this kind of conspiracy theory is going to take hold among conservatives. And that's part of the reason Mr. Trump has such a grip on that vote, I think.
Jeff, there are a lot of theories out there that are unfounded conspiracy theories. How do they impact people's perception of the Russia investigation?
That it's not real. And that's a problem going forward because it is real. It is important. And I know that the FBI is concerned that at the end of the day, people trust in what they conclude.
Jeff Pegues, Justice and Homeland Security correspondent for CBS News and author of the recent book Black and Blue, Inside the Divide Between the Police and Black America. Great to have you on.
Thank you.
Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Thanks so much for being with us today, Karen.
Great to be here.
And Jack Beatty, our On Point news analyst. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. This is On Point.